Are you one of our regular students for Self-Improvement Wednesday? Each week you get to learn something new. Your lesson this week, Mars. Could it be Earth's lifeboat? Your teacher is Professor Fred Watson from the Australian Astronomical Observatory. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Richard.
There's a lot of talk of Mars being, well, yes, our lifeboat.
Yeah, and I guess it's, you know, the thinking behind that is that Mars is in many ways very similar to our own planet. It's first of all, it's got a solid surface, unlike some of the planets in the solar system. It has an atmosphere, not as thick as ours. It's only 1% of the pressure of the Earth's atmosphere. It has about a third of our gravity. But curiously, and I don't get this really, but curiously, it has almost the same day length, 24 hours, 40 minutes, and almost the same axial tilt, 25 degrees.
Wow, that's amazing,
that's
isn't it?
That's weird, yeah.
It's weird.
It's one of those weirdities that the universe
We could go to Mars and still keep our same wristwatch.
All of the above, that's correct.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cold, average daytime temperature minus 40, and you would need breathing apparatus, but you could go.
Isn't minus 40 what it is in Toronto or somewhere?
Toronto. Yeah, so it's, I think the average global temperature on Mars is minus 63.
Places on Earth, we live with that.
It's not like Venus, which is the temperature of melting lead or something like that. You know, it's within survivability.
Okay. Indeed. Is it the same size as Earth?
It's half the diameter, but has the same surface area. And that's because there are no oceans. The same land area.
Yeah, yeah.
No oceans on Mars. So you've got the same amount of land to cover.
Okay. At this point, it's sounding quite good.
It is. And of course, we live in a world that is in many ways filled with uncertainty, much of it of our own doing. And so there are doomsayers amongst us, and there's quite a notable one actually who passed away very recently, mm-hmm. Stephen Hawking, who reckoned that, you know, if it's not a runaway virus or a global war or famine or global warming, maybe it would be something external or something physical like a super volcano or an asteroid impact or a nearby supernova, an exploding star.
Could really a big volcano destroy the Earth?
What we're talking about is not the Earth. We're talking about life on Earth. We're talking about the biosphere, which is incredibly delicate.
But we've had big volcanoes before in history.
And they've very nearly done it too. There is one called the Tora volcano. It's a super volcano, apparently an eruption about 75,000 years ago. And
Where was that?
In Sumatra.
Sumatra.
And we know that about the same time, there was what's called a genetic bottleneck. When you look back at the genetics of humans, you find that at that time the population was reduced to something like 10,000. It was tiny compared with what it is now. And so science has actually been very quick to associate these two events, that the supervolcano goes off, you nearly kill off everybody. But the latest research actually demonstrates that they're probably unconnected, and maybe the genetic bottleneck was actually before the supervolcano.
And that must have had a cause too.
It must have had a cause.
Maybe that was a virus. So
yeah, something like that.
In the Stephen Hawking, something will get us, that kind of fits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We got down to 10,000.
Yeah. And
wow.
But we still survived. And so it's that kind of thinking that leads some people to say, we need a lifeboat. Where's the obvious lifeboat? Oh, it's the fourth rock from the sun. and, of course, it's a planet of extraordinary interest in terms of what we're learning about it now and the things that we're finding out about it.
Now, some people are actually really talking about this in the very much the present tense. Elon Musk, for instance, is actually saying we can get people there by this date and we can do it in this number.
Yeah, that's right. He certainly has a vision which he's basically elaborated on it several times in really very respectable forums indeed. But he's got this vision of colonising Mars, and I actually am a great admirer of Elon Musk and what he has achieved and what he is achieving, but that's where we diverge. Because, well, I'll tell you why in a few minutes, but let me just show briefly what Elon's plans are, which incorporate a new rocket system. You might remember a couple of months ago he launched his Falcon Heavy. Very spectacular, fantastic stuff.
With the car going through space.
The car heading to Mars. Yeah. Look, it's just showmanship of the very highest order and I think very exciting. But he has plans for something even bigger, which is called the BFR. And the BFR apparently stands for the Big Falcon Rocket, because the Falcon series is what he develops. And this is one that makes the current Falcon Heavy rocket that we were admiring a couple of months ago look like a firework night sparkler almost, because it will have the capability of delivering 100 people to Mars. So it is a big machine with huge engineering. And Elon's vision is that in round about 2022, he'll be launching uncrewed cargo flights to Mars.
That's four years away.
It's 4 years away.
Yeah.
Ah, no, that's not very long in this kind of this kind of technology. But 2 years after that, so this is 2024 we're talking about, piling 100 people into one of these things. Actually, I think for the first few flights, it might be less than 20. But getting numbers over to Mars, numbers of people, to really set up the idea of this large colonization. He, I think, really is thinking in almost the widest possible scope. And, of course, that means that you've got some way to backtrack if you do that.
Okay, but the colonization, this is like the ancient Greeks going and seizing islands in the Mediterranean. Is it a good idea? Is it a possible idea?
It is possible, but I think we're talking about timescales much, much longer than what anything is envisaged at the moment. There is another project which I occasionally mention, which is called Mars One, and that's the idea of sending people on a one-way colonization.
This is a Dutch thing, isn't it?
It is. That's correct. Yeah, and it's they've attracted a large number of applicants who are prepared to give up their life on Earth and go and sit on Mars for a while.
Forever.
Yeah.
Well, what's left of them?
Well, that's the problem, because we really don't know how people will survive on Mars. So I don't think the one-way trip is ever going to happen, because I don't think there's any launch agency that would sanction that. And the economics of Mars One are pretty shaky anyway. But coming back to your question, should we do it? Should we colonise Mars? Well, colonisation, we know a bit about colonisation in this country, and it doesn't have a good ending usually, because it implies control. And,
The metaphor of colonisation is somewhere like India, where there are people living when the British take it over. There's no people living on Mars.
There's no people, but we don't know what there is. That's one of the reasons why we need to be really careful, because it is possible. We know that Mars has been habitable in the past. 4 billion years ago, it had a climate like ours. Something happened to change that, probably a sort of fairly slow process, but we know there were rivers, there were seas, there were lakes. And the Curiosity rover has been investigating those and has demonstrated quite categorically that, yes, Mars was habitable. We do see really tantalising bits of evidence that suggest that maybe Mars is still inhabited, because there are these methane spikes that have been detected in Mars's atmosphere over a number of years. Methane is one of these things that you've got to keep replenishing, or else it just dissipates into nitrogen, carbon and hydrogen. So that is one of the pointers to the fact that maybe there are still living organisms.
Okay, but even so, you're saying, let's say there is this bacteria, gradually evolving bacteria there on Mars.
Yeah.
You're saying that if we took over Mars, stomped around on it, changed it.
In our millions.
There'd be a moral problem with that.
Yeah, so that's the first, I think, the first aspect of it is the ethics of it. But I think the second one...
There's only a bit of bacteria, Fred.
Well, there's a standard code of ethics that the whole world has signed up to in what's called COSPAR, the Committee for Space Research. There's things called the Planetary Protection Rules, which you and I have talked about before in this forum a long time ago, which says that you've got to sterilise everything. You can't just stomp around and take earthly microbes to somewhere like Mars or bring Martian microbes back. So all that has to, you've got to fit any kind of ideas for colonisation within that framework. And at the moment, they certainly don't fit. But I think perhaps the greater difficulty with this is that, first of all, we've got a very broad public perception, which is unrealistic, because we have people like Mars One and like Elon saying, yeah, we can do it, we can take hundreds of people to Mars in just a few years, when the reality is that the technology is simply not ready for it yet, and we still got some huge problems to solve, like how do you avoid the radiation hazard on the way to Mars? You can't build a bunker on a spacecraft that's got to get off the Earth's surface and take 100 people.
I wonder if the other point against getting too overexcited about Mars as a lifeboat is that it kind of puts you off trying to solve the problems here on Earth.
That is exactly the crunch. It gives you this false expectation. It diverts your attention from what the real problems are. We have a perfectly adapted planet to our needs here. And, you know, we've done a pretty good job at looking after it while we've been small in number. But now we have a large population, a technological population. We had something called the Industrial Revolution, which I remember very clearly.
You were there, weren't you?
I was there at the time, lad. Aye. Shoveling the coal.
He was up chimney.
Up chimney, aye. And so all of that stuff. Yeah, we've not really done a very good job in recent years. And I think it actually is a better idea to concentrate our energies and efforts on looking after our own planet. Having said that, I am not a Luddite when it comes to spaceflight. I'm absolutely excited by it, and I think it's inevitable that we will set foot on the planet Mars, but I don't want us to do it in huge numbers.
Okay, and let's not treat it as a lifeboat. Let's stop the main ship from sinking.
That's the one.
Thank you very much. Mars and its role as Earth's lifeboat. Is it a good idea? Your teacher's been Professor Fred Watson from the Australian Astronomical Observatory. You can listen back to his lesson online, of course, abc.net.au. There you can also subscribe to the free Self-Improvement Wednesday podcast. So subscribe to the free TGIF podcast while you're at it. Next week, the fabulous fungi, the good, the bad, and those we can't live without, with Dr. Brett Summerall from the Royal Botanic Gardens. That's Self-Improvement next week.